Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Monarch butterflies make one of the longest annual migrations in the known insect world, nearly 3,000 miles from Canada to Mexico, passing through Northern California. On February 19th, the heads of these three countries called for an agreement to help the recovery of monarch butterflies. In the last few years, populations of these elegant red, orange, and black-winged butterflies have been massively declining. 2013 was the worst year for the monarchs yet. A recent study from Mexico's World Wildlife Fund shows a 44% decrease in the area of forest habitat occupied by the monarchs last winter. So why is this happening? Well, according to biologists, there are several reasons. One is the loss of milkweed plants throughout the U.S. and Canada. Gary Paul Nabhan, one of today's guests, says we cannot have monarch butterflies without milkweeds because that's what the butterflies eat. And by some counts, milkweeds have declined to only 59% of their former abundance in Midwestern cornfields. Heavy herbicide use and GMO crops have contributed to the milkweed decline, and other culprits are logging in Mexico's fir and pine forests where monarchs spend their winters. Climate change and ecotourism are also negatively affecting the butterflies. So scientists and advocates are getting together on April 14th to mark a day of action for monarchs. Groups will gather to plant milkweeds and provide education and appreciation for these symbolic migratory pollinators. Joining us to talk about what we can do to save the monarchs and why this is so important is Gary Paul Nabhan. He's a nature writer, food and farming activist, and proponent of conserving the links between biodiversity and cultural diversity. Gary is one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. It's devoted to the butterfly by promoting awareness and restoring its natural habitat. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the show. And we're joined by Allison Watson, Community Outreach Program Manager for the Pacific Grove Museum of Natural History. She manages the volunteer docent program at the Pacific Grove Monarch Sanctuary and coordinates the Monarch Monitoring Citizen Science Program at the museum. And Allison joins us from Pacific Grove. Hi, Allison. Welcome to the show. Gary and Allison, are you with us? Hello, Gary? Do we have our guests? I think we're having some phone issues. All right, we'll fix that in a minute. So if you've seen any changes in monarchs in your area, we'd love to hear from you. And if you work on this issue, why is this happening and why do you think this is so important? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. One of our guests today, Gary Paul Nabhan, says that to save the monarch butterfly, we have to be as strategic and courageous as Rachel Carson, the author of The Silent Spring. And I think we have our guests. Gary and Allison, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And Gary, are you with us? Okay. So Allison, first off, it's kind of shocking to read these numbers that the monarchs are in such trouble. First, what are we facing right now?
So it's really an interesting situation, and the eastern population of monarchs is facing a severe decline, and the western monarchs are facing something that's sort of a little bit different, and that's what we have here in California. So there's all this news about the eastern monarchs, which is in one way great because it's bringing light on monarchs and also kind of making people be more aware of kind of how monarchs are in peril.
So what's the difference between the eastern and western monarchs?
Sure. So eastern monarchs, those are the ones that migrate from anywhere east of the Rockies, so from way up north in Canada, all the way down to their wintering grounds in Mexico. Our western monarchs don't make as long a migration, so they will come from Canada or Washington or Oregon or even California, and they'll go to the hundreds of different sites that we have here on the California coast.
And so when we're talking about the western monarch, according to scientists, the problem is that there's so much pressure on their breeding grounds from logging in Mexico, and then there's the elimination of milkweed in the United States due to herbicides and development. And that's what the monarchs eat, right? Milkweed plants?
Yeah, that's their host plant. So that's the thing that they depend on when they're in their larval stage or as a caterpillar. And that's the same for both the eastern and western populations. So even here in California, our monarchs, when they'll eventually leave our central coast as adult butterflies, they're going out and they're looking for milkweed. And so they need to be able to find it because that's the only plant they can lay their eggs on, and it's the only thing they can eat as a caterpillar. Mm. So if we're facing problems like drought, where we're not going to have as big a milkweed population here in the West, that's going to be a huge factor towards monarch survival.
And Gary, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Greetings.
Hi. Gary Paul Nabham is a nature writer who is one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. And you have a great op-ed in the LA Times. And you write, to save the monarch butterfly, we have to be as strategic and courageous as Rachel Carson, the author of The Silent Spring. But first off, what else would you add? Why are the monarchs in so much trouble right now?
Well, I agree with what's said. Already in the Midwest alone, there's been a 64% decline in milkweeds that's resulted in an 88% decline in monarchs since 1999. That's not only due to more herbicides being used to deal with superweeds that no one wants, farmers or anyone else, but it's also due to taking land out of conservation reserve programs on farmlands that is now going into ethanol production rather than being habitat for wildlife. And we also have the urban loss and fragmentation of habitat as land is developed, and that's true in California and even here in Arizona, where many of our monarchs summer before they move to California. So we've seen a 72% reduction in the size of area and monarchs overwintering in Mexico since 1999 is not surprising when we haven't taken care of our own habitat in the United States that contributes to these fantastic migrations.
Scientists say that 2013 was the worst year for the monarchs yet. So did this happen quickly or was it gradual?
Well, I first came down to the overwintering grounds in Mexico in the mid-1990s, and there was already concern then. Bob Pyle and Lincoln Brower had already had IUCN declare monarchs an endangered phenomenon. It wasn't that monarchs as a species was endangered, but their migratory patterns were already being disrupted. But our focus, as Omar can tell us, was stopping logging in and near the wintering grounds, and we weren't paying as much attention of this ramp up in superweeds and the control measures to try to deal with them that has developed in this extraordinary loss of 20 farmland milkweeds out of the 120 milkweed species we have on the continent. So here in my county, we have a wide variety of milkweeds that are not being sprayed or rooted out, but in most in the summer round, for both migratory trajectories, we're having tremendous changes in agricultural land use that's hurting milkweeds as well as monarchs and the entire insect community associated with them. This is not just about one species, but an entire community of which monarchs are the flagship.
And Allison, I mean, you're educating the public about monarch butterflies. Talk a little bit about why they're so important. Every fall, they migrate close to 3,000 miles, which is amazing, the second longest migration in the known insect world after dragonflies. The journey takes about 2 months. They cross three countries, Mexico, the U.S., and Canada. Talk about the importance of the monarchs.
So the monarchs are an important, one, they're an indicator species, and when things start to affect the monarchs, that means that there are severe changes happening in our environment that can be affecting them. Now, our western monarchs don't go travel as far as our eastern kind of counterparts do. But even when the monarchs come here, it's really important that when we improve their habitat, so when we plant more milkweed and when we take care of our wintering sites here, we're not only improving the habitat for our monarch butterflies, we're improving them for pollinators everywhere. So it's really important that we take care of our pollinators.
And Gary, what would you add to that?
Well, I think that's dead on target. And, you know, what we need to do now is get the half of America's farmers who are already doing wildlife habitat improvement on their farms and ranches for vertebrate wildlife to understand that this invertebrate, which we haven't given enough attention to, is as valuable or more valuable than some of the vertebrates that have received millions of dollars of support to improve their habitat. We need to engage farmers in it. Our Make Way for Monarch recovery project has 12 farmers from 9 states involved on our advisory board, and they're already doing it. So we need to have farmer-to-farmer training. This can't just be small pollinator gardens around schools and public places. We need to see that our highway rights of way, our farmlands, our railroad lines, and our transmission lines are all habitats for abundant milkweeds and other nectar sources for monarchs.
What response are you hearing from farmers when you talk to them about these issues?
You know, farmers are pragmatic. They know that they have to deal with weeds, but they know that these super weeds have, in their words, forced them to spray more. They would like to see alternatives. 50% of the farmers who are using some of these herbicide-tolerant crops are dissatisfied with the results they're getting because they're creating more tenacious weeds, and they're looking toward integrated weed management. They're bright people. They know that their children and their grandchildren love monarchs, so they want to be part of the solution, not seen as part of the problem.
And Gary, what happens to the ecosystem if the monarchs fade out or disappearing? I mean, considering the fact that so many of them are disappearing, what's happening to the ecosystem right now?
Well, we are close to having a syndrome present on much of North America that was just a concept 15 years ago, and that syndrome is called food web collapse. It wasn't even used in the literature till about 15 years ago, and now with bumblebees, honeybees, and monarchs, and untold other butterflies that are affected by the same impacts as monarchs are, we're seeing the whole breakdown of entire food chains that support our pollination services that in turn support our food security. So this affects farmers in their pocketbooks, it affects eaters, and it affects anyone who loves wildlife.
And what would you add to that, Allison? We've done a few shows, actually, about bees and what happens to the ecosystem when we lose bees. But what do you tell people who come to the museum about, you know, how monarchs are affecting the ecosystem if and when they disappear?
Definitely dead on with what Gary was saying. And then also, I think one of the best things that we can leave people with is everything that they can then do. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about, you know, all of these pollinators that are leaving us and the potential devastation that can have on our ecosystems and habitats, the best thing is that we then leave people with what they can specifically do. Because there are so many things people can do to not only help monarchs, but to help other pollinators. So, for example, if you live in the nice, warm valley areas of California, plant milkweed. It's that simple. If you live on the coast closer to monarch butterfly wintering habitats, plant flowers. The monarchs need to eat during the winter as we get this kind of warmer winter weather. So, yes, there are some problems that we're facing, but there are so many ways that people can help.
And that is Allison Watson, Community Outreach Program Manager for the Pacific Grove Museum of Natural History, where she manages the Volunteer Docent Program and coordinates the Monarch Monitoring Citizen Science Program. Gary Paul Nabhan is a nature writer and proponent of conserving the links between biodiversity and cultural diversity. He's one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. It's devoted to the butterfly by promoting awareness and restoring its natural habitat. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What do monarchs mean to you? And have you noticed changes in their appearance in your area? Over the last few years, if you've been lucky enough to see them on a regular basis, what are you seeing today? And if you work with monarch butterflies or work with trying to maintain their habitat, what can we all do to save the monarchs? And why is this so important? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Michelle in Pacific Grove. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for having me. It's so funny because I was just speaking to Allison in the Pacific Grove Museum of Natural History a few weeks ago, and she gave me some great information when I came in when I'm concerned about the monarchs as well. And Allison knows this, and I actually came into fruition. I started a little project to distribute seed packets to the local community and these little information packets through a campaign that I'm calling the Butterfly Barricade. It's on Facebook. And we also have a online Indiegogo site, Butterfly Barricade. And what we're doing is getting people, like, we're only trying to create this movement where people can buy these kits that'll tear apart, have the information side, and also a postcard that can go to Congress that supports H.R. 2692, which is a bill that will limit the use of herbicides and neonicotinoids in the field. I'm really hoping, you know, that I can get the support that we can all kind of pitch in. And these kits include little seed packets so people can actually use your milkweed. You need your localized native flower seed mix for the central. We're distributing that. And
great. And is your Facebook page Butterfly Barricade Protect America's Pollinators?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just found it, and we'll put a link on our website right after the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. Gary, do you want to talk about the bill that she was referring to that would limit herbicides? And what is the status of that?
Well, there's several different bills. There's a Save America's Pollinators bill introduced by an Oregon congressman. And looking broadly at better regulation of untargeted and excessive use of both neonicotinoids and other chemicals. There are also state memorial resolutions asking for pollinator and monarch risk assessments at the state level, and there's other kinds of oversight. You know, the Mexican, U.S., and Canadian presidents signed a monarch recovery agreement in late February, making monarchs the emblematic species of international cooperation, a remarkably poetic initiative. And we were part of that along with Mexican conservationists, but we need to make sure that we understand that if Mexico or Canada lists monarchs, it has effect on a number of our international treaties, including a migratory wildlife treaty. So there's various mechanisms going through Congress, state legislature, and through the administrative branch of the U.S., and that's why we're having an April 14th Day of Action nationally. There'll be a liturgy at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco and dozens of their churches, synagogues, and mosques to do milkweed plantings by faith-based communities. The same thing is happening on campuses that day, and people can read about all those initiatives, including the bills pending in Congress and state legislatures on makewayformonarchs.org.
Okay, great. And we also have a link on our website. That is Gary Paul Nabhan, a nature writer and one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. Allison Watson is Community Outreach Program Manager for the Pacific Grove, where she does a lot of educating about the monarch butterflies. And now I would like to welcome Omar Vidal. He's General Director for the World Wildlife Fund in Mexico, one of the major organizations working to protect monarch butterflies. Hi, Omar. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rose. Nice talking to you.
Well, it's great to have you. So I wanted to ask you a question about the fir and pine trees in Mexico. These were intensely logged for a long time. Why are these so important for monarch butterflies?
Well, you know, as many people for years have known, monarch prefer these high-altitude habitats in these overwintering sites in Mexico, which are hosting these kind of trees. So these trees evidently provide the microclimates that monarchs need. And you clearly said that that was a threat, and still we have been worried about this for long. But fortunately, thanks to the Mexican government efforts and many people here, and especially the communities, the logging, illegal logging, has dramatically decreased in recent years.
It's decreased. Is it still happening?
Well, we have a different challenge now. We used to have this big challenge, which has large-scale logging by organized groups. Now that has been tackled, I will say, for the most part. But this, we have a challenge here in terms of this small-scale logging conducted by local communities. So that is that, unfortunately, is continuing at a much lesser scale. But that involves a different approach because, you know, most of these local inhabitants are using some of these trees for subsisting process. So I think the challenge now is to increase the support to the communities so that they realize that the trees are more valuable when they are there than when they cut them. But it still is a much lesser problem that happened to be in the last years, but it's still something that we have to watch carefully.
Well, and it's amazing when you think about what has changed just in the last year alone. You co-wrote an op-ed for CNN called NAFTA Leaders Could Save the Monarch Butterflies, and you write that according to surveys carried out by the World Wildlife Fund with Mexico's National Commission on Protected Areas, the entire hibernating population of monarchs in the 2013-2014 season occupied an area of forest not much bigger than a football field, a mere 1.6 acres. This is a 44% drop from the previous season. I mean, that's a massive drop in just one season.
That is correct, but I think this is showing a pattern. It's not just happening from one season to the other, because what we have seen in our monitoring work over the last 10 years is that this pattern of decreasing monarchs has been continued for the last 10 years. And I think, of course, it is difficult to blame one or two or the three threats for the monarch, but I think it's a combination. You have on one side the logging that happened in the past in Mexico. A second, you have the problem of herbicides that I think you were discussing with your previous guest in the U.S. and the loss of habitat in terms of the breeding habitat and reproductive habitat for the monarchs in the U.S. And of course, you combine this with these periodic extreme weather conditions throughout the range, when you have severe cold summer or winter temperatures. So what we're seeing now is probably the result of all these factors together.
And that is Omar Vidal, General Director for the World Wildlife Fund in Mexico, one of the major organizations working to protect monarch butterflies. And today we are talking about the plight of the monarch butterfly. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Scientists say that 2013 was the worst year for the monarchs yet. And so we're talking about efforts to save them, to raise awareness about this issue. April 14th is going to be a day of action for the monarchs. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. What can we do to save them, and why is this so important? It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. If you'd like to join in today's discussion, please give us a call. The number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, and it's a toll-free call. If you'd rather write than get on the phone, you can send us an email. The email inbox address is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can simply post your comment or idea on the website, yourcallradio.org. You have an opportunity to help change a life this summer by hosting a summer intern from one of San Francisco's high school career academies. More information on the summer internship program is available at KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation about sugar. What is it really doing to our bodies? And do you think it should be regulated like tobacco or alcohol? Do you think it should be taxed? With obesity and diabetes on the rise, is it time to regulate the sugar industry? Or do you think a public health awareness campaign would suffice? That's tomorrow. And Friday, it's our media roundtable. You can email your story of the week or something that stood out for you to feedback at yourcallradio.com. Today, we are talking about the plight of the monarch butterfly. These butterflies make one of the longest annual migrations in the known insect world, 3,000 miles from Canada to Mexico, passing through Northern California. 2013 was the worst year for the monarchs because of many reasons. One is the loss of milkweed plants in the U.S. That's what the monarchs eat. Heavy herbicide use, GMO crops, other culprits are logging in Mexico, climate change, ecotourism. So a number of scientists and advocates are getting together across the country on April 14th to mark a day of action for the monarchs. And joining us to talk about the monarchs and what we can do to save them and why this is so important is Gary Paul Nabhan. He's a nature writer and one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. Allison Watson is community outreach program manager at the Pacific Grove Museum. She manages the volunteer docent program at the Monarch Sanctuary there. And Omar Vidal is general director for World Wildlife Fund in Mexico, one of the major organizations working to protect monarch butterflies. And we have full lines, but we'll have one open in a minute at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Charles. He says, I've never heard anyone mention freeway and highway killing of monarchs. This is a major killer. He says, I've seen many monarchs dead or dying on the side of highways while bicycle touring and road walking. They're attracted to flowers and the garden bands beside the high-speed traffic lanes. Once they're in the death zone, their chance of survival is low. Gary, how often does this happen, and is this one of the reasons why we're seeing them disappear?
Well, it can't be denied that monarchs are killed along some roadsides. Ironically, the first tagged monarch found in Mexico was in a windshield wiper, and that's what helped Fred Urquhart figure out that his Canadian monarchs and Minnesota monarchs were getting down to Michoacan. So the thing we have to remember is that highway sides, electric transmission lines, and railroad lines are enormous public spaces where milkweeds can be planted. And if we ramp those up, the relative number of monarchs killed by cars or trains relative to the recovery of monarchs that can happen by making those milkweed corridors is minuscule. In other words, we'll gain much more, even though a few monarchs will be killed at each site. But they're also killed right now by the way we mow highway sides and spray them. And so I think if we turn highway sides into toxin-free corridors where milkweeds are planted, that will more than compensate for the number of monarchs killed along highway sides.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Charles. You can email us feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
There was an article a day or two ago in the Chronicle about how they're planning to retire farmland in the San Joaquin Valley, partly because of the drought, partly because of poor drainage, which really doesn't make it that good for crops in the long run. So I'm just putting it out there that perhaps that land could be given over to milkweed, and it sounds like it would be a good alternative or addition to planting the highway roadside.
Mm. Allison, do you want to talk about that since you do educate people about the benefits of planting milkweed?
Yeah, sure. And first, I'd like to say that's a wonderful idea. We love when people start to realize how important this plant is for monarchs. And as you can kind of realize that there are more areas that we could be planting them along highways or aside from farmland or places that are kind of sectioned off for it, it's really important. And the other thing I want to say is that even if you have an area in San Francisco or somewhere where you have area in your backyard and you can plant milkweed, there are organizations that also want to know
if your milkweed's being used. So the Xerxes Society is a great organization that's interested in learning about if you have caterpillars or eggs, and so is Monarch Watch from the University of Minnesota. And so it's kind of nice. I always say it's the selfish thing to do because you can plant milkweed and then you'll have butterflies and caterpillars.
That's so nice. Well, and I know we have a lot of gardeners listening. So what would you say about planting milkweed? Is there a specific place that's better for it? Does it get along or not get along with certain plants? Or can you just plant it anywhere if you have some open space in your backyard?
Yeah,
or front yard?
Oh, yeah. It really just depends on where you live if you're in California. The Xerxes Society just created on their website, it's a milkweed finder. So you can find areas that will basically, you can buy native milkweed seed or seedlings from them. So that way you're going to be planting the right milkweed depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. And that's throughout the whole country that they're making this available. And then so if you live inland away from our wintering monarch sites, plant milkweed. But actually, if you live in areas like Santa Cruz or Pacific Grove, that you're actually close to where our monarch butterflies winter, since our monarch butterflies don't go down to Mexico in California, you should not plant milkweed. And that's because what will happen is if we plant milkweed that's non-native, that'll grow during the winter, it could possibly bring our monarchs out of their diapause, out of their wintering, and that could harm them because they need to be able to survive for that long period of time during the winter.
So can you just quickly, and we'll get back to calls in just a minute, can you talk about the migratory patterns of the butterflies that we see in California?
Oh, sure. So our monarch butterflies, they come from everywhere west of the Rockies. Hmm. So the monarch butterflies that hatch out of their chrysalises in September or so, that could be anywhere in Canada or Idaho or even in California, they have this instinct to migrate southwest, and they'll go to any one of our hundreds of different wintering sites between San Francisco and all the way down to San Diego on the coast. Hmm. So unlike in Mexico, where they're all kind of centrally in one area, ours are much more spread out, and we have a smaller population. So our biggest, one of the biggest sites in California is Pismo Beach, and they had about 30,000 monarch butterflies this winter.
Wow.
And so it's, and over here we had about a little less than 14,000 monarch butterflies this winter in Pacific Grove. And
just
it can range from
like
that
nests.
Many to, you know, 500 at a site.
Gary, you want to jump in?
Yes, I should say that we shouldn't neglect the Southwest in this story. Remarkably, we found that monarchs that Gail Morris and I have tagged in the area near Nogales, Arizona, right on the border, go three directions. They go to Pismo Beach, and the tags that we've left on them here have shown up in Pismo Beach. They go down to Michoacan as well, where Omar has worked, and they go to Kino Bay on the Sea of Cortez coast of Sonora. There's also reports of occasional, if not permanent, overwintering grounds in Baja California. So there's still a lot more that we need to know. And these marginal populations may be critical, given that we've created huge sacrifice areas in parts of the Midwest. We really need to pay attention to these populations on the margins because they're sources of recovery to the overall migratory trajectories.
And Allison, I'm sure you get a lot of great questions from children at the museum about monarchs. How long do they fly? For how many hours at a time?
So they'll fly throughout the day, and then they can fly up to, you know, 15 miles per hour on their own. And then, of course, you know, butterflies are going to be smart. They're going to try and catch wings or wind. But so they'll really fly throughout the day and until they make it here. Hmm. And that whole time just gorging themselves on flowers, filling up with nectar, so that way they have a nice energy reserve when they get here, which is why it's really important to plant flowers, not only for other pollinators, but for monarch butterflies.
And what is their life cycle?
So their life cycle, they start out as an egg, and the timeline between each phase of their life cycle, it depends on the weather. So if it's warmer, it speeds up. If it's cooler, it kind of extends. But they're an egg for about like 1 to 3 days, or 3 to 4 days, and then they hatch into a caterpillar. And this is where if you have milkweed, you're going to see caterpillars. And it's really quite amazing if you have milkweed in your backyard for caterpillars, if you'll just see how much one caterpillar can really eat. You just chow down on a plant. It's quite fun to watch. And they'll be like that for 2 weeks.
And then they'll eventually form their chrysalis, which is where they're going to make the transformation from caterpillar into butterfly. And that'll last about another 2 weeks. And then the lifespan of the adult monarch butterfly depends on the generation that it is. So summer generations of butterflies, like the ones that will eventually be hatched out around this time of year, they're going to live about 4 to 6 weeks. But our wintering butterflies, they live 6 to 8 months. They're basically living from September all the way through February, March.
And that's Allison Watson. She's Community Outreach Program Manager for the Pacific Grove Museum of Natural History, working to educate the public about the monarch butterfly. Gary Paul Nabhan is a nature writer and one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project, devoted to the butterfly by promoting awareness and restoring its natural habitat. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today we're talking about the plight of the monarch butterfly. What can we do to save them, and why is this so important? Let's hear next from Sarah in El Cerrito. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Let's see. I had a few comments. The first, I think you'd reach millions more people if you could get everything you said on the show into all the different religions, because most Americans will only listen seriously to people from their own religion, and, you know, one day a week, and everybody else who's not a part of the religion, they just sort of barely listen to it all. And especially the people that use Roundup and pesticides and are committed to monoculture and have no interest in changing government policies. So it needs to be in each separate religion, in their buildings where they meet once a week, and maybe do a 30-second time-lapse photography. I was lucky enough about 1968 to see a monarch from cocoon to monarch, and as a five-year-old kid, I put it in a jar in the garage, and then it hatched on my finger, and it flew from my finger in the garage the first flight, and so, you know, to have that personal experience, to see it in 30-second time lapse. And the guy from Mexico is I've heard that mono, and I saw a video on YouTube, monoculture is ruining the forest in Mexico. Mm. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is involved in that with the carbon tax. And Jane Goodall was for that carbon tax. Maybe she was being lied to about what it was really going to do. The super rich are using that as an excuse to do monoculture in these forests around the world.
Well, thank you for calling in, Sarah. Unfortunately, we lost Omar. We had a bad line. But Gary, do you know what's going on with monoculture and logging in Mexico?
You know, there's portions of the Mexican range of the migratory routes, both in the Chihuahuan Desert and the Sonoran Desert, that have a lot of row crops where herbicides are used and a lot of habitat is being lost due to land clearing in the north. So the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to be not only supporting collaborations with Mexico NGOs like Omar's World Wildlife Fund to work in Michoacán alone, but also work along the corridors for habitat restoration. And the next big meeting on this is in Querétaro in May, and I think we're going to see both American and Mexican groups step up to the plate and say, we want to ramp up milkweed habitat in farmland corridors 10 to 100-fold the next few years. We can't afford to have these organisms drop out of our lives and be unavailable to inspire our children. I must step out now, but blessings to everyone who's doing work on monarchs and milkweeds, because we need them in our lives and we need them as a symbol of international cooperation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Gary. That is Gary Paul Nabhan. He's a nature writer, one of the creators of the Make Way for Monarchs project. And again, April 14th is a day of action for the monarchs. And Sarah, you'd be happy to know that Gary is planning to have church services throughout the United States on April 14th. So you were spot on. He's going to be talking with various people in churches about this issue to raise awareness. And also, you you should check out his LA Times op-ed called Monarchs, Milkweed, and the Spirit of Rachel Carson. Rachel Carson in 1963 said, quote, "But most of all, I shall remember the monarchs, that unhurried westward drift of one small winged form after another, each drawn by some invisible force." End quote. And Gary says that to save the monarch butterfly, we have to be as strategic and courageous as Rachel Carson, the author of The Silent Spring. So thank you again for calling. And you can find more information about these efforts at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Jane in Corte Madera. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the show.
This is a great program. One of the things I wish an expert who might call in, if you would ask them, there are a lot of species of milkweed, so I would like to know which is the best. I'm just starting to plant my garden again, and I've raised two monarch butterflies from egg to butterfly on my dining room table, if you can believe it. And they do eat a lot of plants, and I got to the point where I was running out of food, and I had to go out and find some more, because, boy, when those caterpillars grow, they really eat a lot of leaves.
Wow.
And they're just loads of fun to watch, and they don't leave the plant. I mean, they're there until they turn into their chrysalis, so you don't have to worry about a caterpillar crawling all over your house. And also, people who are listening, if you see a caterpillar, don't kill it until you know for sure that it's not a butterfly caterpillar, because there's a lot of bad caterpillars out there, and people think in general they're just not good because they eat your leaves. Well, some can eat my leaves, and I don't care, because I want to have monarchs. And another question that I have is, what are the nectar flowers that we should be planting? You know, monarchs don't go by sight. They go by smell, and they look for the fragrance of the flower that they like. And if you watch them in your garden, they cruise, and they kind of go to one flower, and they don't like that one, and then they cruise. All butterflies do that. They cruise for fragrance, not for sight.
Huh. Well, Jane, thank you so much. Great questions. Allison, how do we know if a caterpillar is going to turn into a butterfly?
So all caterpillars are going to be turning into something. And then the nice thing about our monarch caterpillars is that they are nice, bright black, white, and yellow caterpillars. And so it's kind of easy to be like, oh, we have monarch butterflies. And then also it just depends on what kind of plant they are. Many butterflies have host plants that they depend on. And so if it's on milkweed, chances are that it's most likely a monarch caterpillar. And I just want to say thank you for planting milkweed. And to answer your first question about, you know, what type of milkweed you should be planting, I would just point you towards the Xerxes Society's website, where they have a milkweed finder, and it'll point you towards, they have a whole native milkweed guide. So that way, depending on what region you're in, it'll tell you what milkweed's going to grow best and be best for the insects in your area. So that's a fantastic website to go to.
And just quickly, that website, we have it linked on our site, but it's xerces.org. That's xerces.org.
Yes. And then as far as nectaring plants, we've seen the same thing at the Monarch Sanctuary here in Pacific Grove. When the monarchs are here during the winter months, so from November through February, they'll be flying around, and they kind of have different favorites every year. So this year, bottle brush is always a good one, and then our kind of like our white daisy tree was a great one. And then we're also planting plants that will nectar during the winter or bloom during the winter, because we want to give our monarchs the chance on these warmer weather days for the chance to be able to eat and refuel. So our plants are going to be different than, say, if you're looking for maybe some native plants to plant during the summer or just depending on where you live. But there's definitely tons of resources, tons of native plant nurseries that will help you towards that.
And Jane said that the butterflies go from flower to flower, and they might like the smell of one and maybe not the next. What can you tell us about the eyes of the monarch butterfly?
Oh, sure. So one of my favorite things for our second graders is we talk about how monarch butterflies smell, and they actually use their antenna to smell. And so they're looking for milkweed, and they're looking for nectaring plants. And then when they land on a flower, they actually use their feet to taste. So they're tasting for the nectar there. And it seems to me that when you're watching the monarch butterflies, they're looking for an easy flower to land on. And so daisies are nice flat and open. If it's a hard flower to land on, it's sort of, you know, it might be too much effort. At least that's what we observe here at the sanctuary.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling. And we've got some questions about the Day of Action, April 14th, Day of Action to Save the Monarch. And you can find more information, makewayformonarchs.org. We've got a number of other links on our website. And let's go next to Francis in San Francisco. Hi, Francis. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. I am just curious. My son and I every year raise painted ladies that you can get online or from a store in a little pavilion, and you release them. Are there other butterflies, such as the monarch butterfly? Can you get that in some sort of a kit and have every grade schooler raise monarch butterflies?
Yes. And then there's sort of, we love to have that experience of, you know, having people involved hands-on with monarch butterflies. And so with that, wild butterflies and farmed butterflies are different populations, and we try not to mix those populations. So the sort of stand is that if you're able to go out, and I would say plant milkweed, and that's the easiest step to getting wild chrysalis, and then you can bring it inside, bring in the caterpillars, and go from there. But I would say the best step to having schools have butterflies where then every kid can have one and release it on their own is to actually plant school milkweed gardens. So that way you're supporting the wild monarch butterfly population, and then everyone's kind of involved in that experience.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Francis. Let's go next to Wanda in Berkeley. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. Thank you for calling. I mean, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am imitating you. I'm really concerned. There was a demonstration 2 weeks ago by a group, a disability group called Quito, and it was in regards to the spraying of Roundup that's going to be going on in the East Bay Hills and actually has started already. People have seen trucks up there doing it. University of California and FEMA are involved in eradicating the species that are not in native, and they're using Roundup. They want to do it with Roundup, and I think this is something that we need to all be concerned about, and people should call their congresspeople about it. Mm-hmm. Because I called Nancy Skinner's office, and they seemed to not realize that this was going on. I mean, it's kind of amazing that people couldn't realize that it was going on. But I don't know if our government agencies are doing these things, and the University of California, which, you know, is basically British Petroleum, we need to stop this. We need to make a stand.
Well, thank you for calling. We have an email from AD who says, what would Rachel Carson do? I think she would contact California local berry growers and suggest they stop using Roundup and instead plant milkweed. And then you can call your local library and ask them to replace the paper towel machine with one that is not owned by Boise Cascade, and that is owned by the Koch brothers. So there's all kinds of connections being made here. Do you know, Allison, about just, you know, California lawmakers? I mean, are they in tune with this issue? Do they understand what's happening with pollinators?
You know, I think that the best way that you can ensure that that happens is to contact your congressman and to make sure that it is, because I think they respond to what people, what their constituents tell them to respond to. And I think that the nice thing about this radio show is it's given the opportunity for people who are concerned about monarchs to call in, but then also to spread the word. And I think we're very lucky in California that we have a very direct link to monarchs. So the best way to spread the word is bring someone to a monarch sanctuary or a wintering monarch site. So if you're in Santa Cruz, go to Natural Bridges during the winter. Or if you're up near Fremont, go to Ardenwood. Or if you're down in Pacific Grove, go here. Because what happens is when people are made in awe or aware of our monarch butterflies, when you first see them in these huge clusters on these trees where you think you're looking at dead leaves, and then you look up close and you just see, oh my gosh, those are thousands of butterflies, it makes you more connected and more aware. So I think the more people we make aware about the monarchs that we have here in California, the more aware then our representatives will be, and the better protected our monarchs are going to be.
Well, we have time for one more caller. Sally in Santa Cruz. Hi, welcome to the show. You've got about 30 seconds.
Oh, I'm so glad you took my call. No one's mentioned this broad-spectrum butterfly virus. I was raising the butterflies, and the larvae were fine the first year. Then someone released this broad-spectrum virus, which affects the caterpillars of all species. They hatch, they start to eat and grow, and then they all turn white and just die.
Hmm.
And this is something available to home gardeners. I don't know if it's used anywhere else, but we need to know that. And so people, if they got caterpillars, they got to do something besides kill everything.
Allison, do you know about this?
So there's definitely different diseases that affect butterflies and actually monarch butterflies. And there's one organization out of the University of Georgia. It's Monarch Health Network or Health Lab. I apologize for messing that one up. But they're actually looking at taking samples from monarch butterflies. So if you have monarch butterflies that fly into your garden and you're able to catch them with like a with a net, you can take a sample from a kit that they'll send you, and then you send them these samples so that way they can better study some of these parasites that are affecting them. And the one that the University of Georgia is studying is OE, which is having different effects on the different populations throughout the United States. And so they're really in the phase of collecting information. And there are tons of different citizen science programs like that about monarchs throughout the United States that you can become involved with and really help. Because collecting data and getting involved, that's a huge part of protecting the species.
Robert in Pacific Grove, we didn't have time for his question, but he wanted to know how climate change is affecting monarchs.
Oh, sure.
And we have about 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. So definitely with the drought that we're seeing, it's going to affect milkweed. And then with our wintering populations, as the weather gets warmer in winter, the monarchs aren't able to stay in their clusters or stay still and kind of conserve their energy. So that's why we say plant flowering plants if you're near a wintering site, because you're going to help them as they start to get more active during these warm winter days that we're having.
Allison Watson is Outreach Program Manager with the Pacific Grove Museum of Natural History. Find more information about all of these issues at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Should we regulate sugar like an addictive substance? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about sugar. What is it really doing to our bodies? And do you think it should be regulated like tobacco or alcohol? The World Health Organization has proposed cutting their recommended sugar intake from 10% to 5% of total daily calories. With obesity and diabetes on the rise, is it time to regulate the sugar industry? Or would a public health awareness campaign suffice? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Should we regulate? Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.